Chapter 9.
Ben?
Mira's voice called out through the darkness.
Gods, Ben! Are you all right?
My entire body felt like it had just been hit by a freight train, and I could feel warm, wet blood pooling all around my body. The weight of the bat creature was still pressing down onto me like a hydraulic press, and I wondered how much longer I could stay under here before I suffocated from the lack of oxygen.
Come on!
Nadir's voice growled.
Let's get him out of there! Its hide is too thick to cut.
Zoranvri reminded the Kunag woman.
We should try to lift it off before it's too late.
If we're not already too late.
Mira said in a grim tone.
Come on the count of three. One, two, three!
All of my friends let out determined grunts as they heaved, and light hit my eyes like the high beams of a car. Instantly, I rolled over and crawled out through the opening. And the second I was free of the creature's body, I flipped over, opened my mouth, and tried to take a deep breath of the warm volcanic air. Soon, all of my women were huddled over me with concerned expressions across their faces.
You're alive!
Lizan clapped her hands together.
We thought that thing had crushed you to death.
I'm fine,
I chuckled in a raspy voice.
Though, I can't say the same for Mira's spear, unfortunately.
In my hand, I held a piece of the spear, so I held it up for everyone to see. It was splintered off at both sides, the two spots that took the brunt of the impact. I was sure the sea glass tip was still lodged inside the albino bat's body, but the damage had definitely been done. The beast was dead, even if it had cost us a weapon.
It's all right,
Mira promised me.
Right here, right now, I could care less about the spear. I'm just glad you're alive.
Me too. I chuckled as I sat up. I slowly pulled myself back up onto my feet and felt the weight of the beast still on me. My whole body was sore and achy, so I did a few quick back cracks and stretches before I thought about addressing my crew. After a few satisfying pops of my joints, I felt somewhat better and was ready to talk to my friends.
What in the gods was that thing?
Mira asked with a shudder.
I don't know,
Kandara admitted.
I documented each and every single animal on our island, and I've never seen anything like this before.
I've never seen anything like that in my world either, I said. I mean, I've seen plenty of bats in my day, but they didn't look anything like this one.
I want to know where it came from,
Mira added.
The last time we were on this island, we didn't encounter a single creature. Maybe it flew in from the sky?
Nadir suggested.
Impossible!
Kandara noted as she grabbed onto one of the creature's wings and raised it into the air.
Look at these wings! They're built for gliding, not for flying long distances.
How do you know so much about animals, Kandara?
I asked as I cracked my back once more.
This one here is our resident life expert.
Alara grinned. The wild-haired morpho wrapped her arm around Kandara's shoulder and pulled her in close, which caused the golden-haired woman to furrow her brow.
Life expert.
Mira flipped her jade hair out of her eyes.
Does that mean you know how to give life?
Kandara pulled away from Halara with an audible huff. Then she brushed one of her golden braids away from her neck and looked directly at Mira.
I wish!
The spacey morpho chuckled.
I really, really dislike that term, but Halara insists on using it anyways. That's because it's the perfect fit for what you do.
Halara protested.
Ever since she was little, Kandara has gone around keeping track of all living things on our island, from the deadly hoppers, to the little tiny bugs, to even the fish she found along our shores. She even had a throat silk tablet where she wrote down everything she saw until it got washed away in one of the storms we had. It didn't matter, though.
A half-smile curved up Kandara's lips.
I had them all memorized by that point. I could tell you right now the difference between a hopper leg and the leg of a snapper scale.
A zoologist, I chuckled. That's what we called people like you back in my world. The people who studied animals and knew all about their habits and body structures and all that.
I like that term a lot better.
The golden-haired morpho nodded.
I'll gladly be your resident zoologist.
Why would you want to study animals?
Lizan questioned as she patted her stomach.
Their body structures and habits don't make a difference once they're inside your belly.
It makes a huge difference.
Zoranvri spoke up.
One time, Kandara stopped us from using hopper bone to reinforce our dwellings. They're too hollow.
The golden-haired morpho shrugged.
That's That's what makes them so great for our weapons. They're light and hard on the outside, but they can't bear much weight. If one of those hideous green creatures hit it with a club, it would shatter into a million pieces. The second we had a strong wind, there would be a huge hailstorm of splintered bone all over our dwellings. See?
Zarandri grinned.
There is a lot of use for Kandara's skills.
The soft-spoken, red-haired Morpho stomped her foot gently into the ground, almost as if she were trying to emphasize her point. She then held her head up and smiled at Kandara.
Look.
Nadir sighed as she pointed at the dead beast.
I don't really care about where this thing came from or what its bones are like. I just have one question. Should we start cutting it up and taking it back up the mountain? My stomach has been growling for a long while.
You don't want to eat that, I warned. Didn't you hear that one orc we killed? He made it sound like he practically got dysentery from eating one of these things. Also, maybe I'm just being overly cautious here, but back in my world, eating bats usually leads to bad things. Very, very bad things.
So what do we do?
The Kunag leader's tail flicked ferociously in protest.
Just leave a deal for the orcs to find?
Not exactly, I said. We can definitely use its fur, and depending on what its insides look like, we might be able to use those too.
I've always thought that Captain's quarters could use a rug.
Mira winked. I was thinking more on the side of armor, I explained. Lazan and Nadir's axes couldn't even pierce through this thing, and it took several hundred pounds of force for the sea glass to break through its hide. Think about how much less damage we'd take if we somehow turned these into breastplates and gauntlets.
If you can even cut it.
Halara noted.
I think you'd have better luck trying to slice a rock with your fingernail.
If anyone can figure it out, it'd be Isla. I chuckled. I swear that dragonkin woman is an actual wizard when it comes to making clothes.
Okay.
Halara sighed.
But this still doesn't answer the question of how we're going to get the hide off its body in the first place.
I raised an eyebrow at the purple-haired butterfly woman. Have you never cleaned an animal before?
We've cleaned ourselves in the river.
She shrugged.
Does that count as cleaning an animal?
No. No. I shook my head. Like, taking off its skin and removing its organs. Didn't you have to do that to get the bones for your weapons?
I wouldn't exactly call the whole process clean.
Kandara shuddered.
We had to slice open its skin, dig in through its muscles, and then snap off the bones. There was blood and viscera everywhere. Then we just left it for the bugs.
Halara added with a shrug.
They cleaned the flesh off a hopper in no time flat.
It sounded like they'd never really done anything like this before, so I needed to teach them. Well, I chuckled. Nadir is right. We can't just leave this body here for the orcs to find. Once it starts to decompose, the smell alone could draw in any of those green bastards from a mile-long radius. We'll have to take out any parts we can use and then bury the rest.
That still doesn't answer my question.
Halara sighed.
The skin?
The skin will come right off if we separate it from the muscle, I explained. It's just a thin layer of fascia that needs to be pulled away with the blade of a knife. And thanks to both me and Mira here, there's already a spot we can slip a blade into it and start to cut.
What about widening the opening?
Mira questioned.
Don't you usually have to cut all the way around the neck before you clean the beast?
Usually, yes, I admitted. But we'll have to see how much give its skin actually has. I have a feeling that now that we've pierced it, the overall structure will be weaker. Then again, there's only one way we're going to find out. I drew my pink-bladed dagger, wandered over to the dead mole bat, and then climbed up onto its body like a lion mounting its kill.
It's safe to come out now, Eric!
Mira called out in the direction where my son had been hiding. Yes, son, I confirmed. The beast is dead. Now get out here so you can help us clean it up. As I glanced back over my shoulder, I saw Arik's silver locks peer out from over the rock he was behind. Then the dragon prince slipped out of his hiding spot and slowly sauntered over to our position.
Psh, I knew that,
he scoffed.
I just wanted to see if I could get a good vantage point for you. You know, so you might be able to kill it easier.
Thanks, I mused. I think I figured it out, though. My son was obviously lying about his reason for being behind the rock. I saw him firsthand. He was back there because he was terrified, and rightly so. Still, I didn't want to embarrass the future king in front of his future subjects, so I just went along with his fib. I stepped across the dead mole bat's fur and up to the hole in the back of his neck that Mira had created. Then I got down on one knee, reached out with my blade, and slid the sharp edge just underneath the creature's flesh. Just as I'd suspected, the blade glided through the connective tissue without much hassle. However, when it hit the edge of the open wound, Alara's fears were realized. The stony pink weapon snagged against the creature's fur, and no matter how hard I tried to force it, the damn thing wouldn't budge. Then I got an idea. Maybe if I could somehow create a bunch of cuts, it would weaken the mole bat's flesh, and then I could tear it like a piece of perforated paper. I lifted my dagger high above my head, took a deep breath, and stabbed it down into the monster's neck. The point of the shimmering rosy blade hit the ashen fur of the fallen creature and entered about half an inch into its body. So I let go of the dagger's handle, raised my foot, and then stomped down onto the hilt as hard as I could. The force of my blow forced the dagger further down into the mole bat's flesh, and when I finally reached down to pull it out, I saw it had left a slit-shaped puncture wound. Next, I temporarily sheathed my blade and squatted down. I took one flap from each side of the monster's original wound in my hands, and then I let out a forceful grunt as I yanked each end in opposite directions. Sure enough, there was the sound of tearing skin, and the beast's hide was now separated all the way down to the end of my second wound.
That looks like it's working.
I wiped the sweat from my forehead. But it's gonna take forever if I have to keep doing it on my own, one hole at a time.
That's what we're here for, Draco Rex.
Mira smiled.
Come on, crew. Let's help our king and captain.
All of my friends ran over to the fallen beast with their weapons drawn. Then they proceeded to create a sort of assembly line as they lined up almost on top of each other and started to repeat my method. My crewmates stabbed the points of their weapons into the creature's body, gave it a good kick, and then created a puncture cut of their own. Once that was done, they would move down to the end of the assembly line to keep the pattern going. And while they did that, I moved down the bloody, perforated line and separated the wounds at the seam. Soon, the flesh fell away from the creature's neck like a gory, blooming flower, and we moved on to its hind end. There, we repeated the process until the flesh was cut away from its rear.
Oh, this is always my favorite part of watching Ben clean an animal.
The deer giggled.
It's just darkly satisfying.
You can say that again, I agreed with a smile. I always feel so twisted for the joy I get out of doing this. I held up one flap of the creature's body, stuck the edge of my knife beneath it, and then began to gently glide the blade through the mucous membrane that held the mole bat's skin against its muscles. The hide peeled away like a sticker straight off the presses, and soon we were left with a large, white carpet of hide and fur.
I'm surprised,
Kandara admitted.
I would have thought something so impenetrable would have been at least a few knuckle bones thick.
That just tells me it's the material itself that's special, and not just natural selection at play. I agreed.
Natural selection?
The golden-haired butterfly woman questioned.
What is that?
Oh, it's something I'm definitely going to have to teach you, I explained. Especially if you want to be the resident zoologist of our crew. Once the bat's fur was pulled away from its body, we laid it out and then rolled it up into a single large tube of flesh and fur. We tied it off in multiple places so it wouldn't unravel, and then we set it off to the side. The hide still needed to have the flesh taken off, and the moisture still needed to be drained from the piece so we could tan it, but those were all things that could be done back at home. Once we got back to the ship, we could salt the hide and roll it up to preserve it, and it should last until we made it back to the Dragonkin Island. The noise from our battle had surely echoed through the forest, and I wanted to get out of here before any orcs or other mole bats were attracted to our position. So we quickly dug a shallow grave with our weapons, shoved the bloodied body of the monster inside, and then buried it as quickly as we could.
That shall be all right,
Mira said as she rubbed her hands together.
It's not the best hiding spot, but at least it will keep the scent from traveling too far and will keep the bugs and birds away.
And that's what's important, I reminded everyone. Nothing will attract an orc like a bunch of circling birds. It's like they can't help themselves when they see rot, decay, and despair. They're attracted to that sort of stuff like a damn magnet.
Do you think we've set up enough traps?
Zorandri glanced around with her head downward. We're gonna have to hope so, I admitted. We could probably use a few more, but I don't want to spend any more time out here. For all we know, there could be more of these bat-fuckers waiting to pounce. We'll just have to hope the traps we've already got set up do what they're supposed to do.
Then we should head back up to the top of the volcano,
Mira suggested.
Surely Jonas has made progress with the rebonding ceremony by now?
I'd hope so, I sighed. Then again, he did mention it was going to take several hours to actually complete. I wouldn't be surprised if we got back up there and he was still in the initial phases of preparation.
Us Morpho girls will carry the hide,
Halara offered.
It's the least we can do, since we don't have to climb like you guys do.
Yeah, rub it in some more. I teasingly winked at the butterfly women. In all seriousness, though, I don't mind the climb. I just look at it as a long, grueling workout that will feel a million times more satisfying once we get to the top.
You don't actually believe that, do you?
Mira whispered. No, I muttered to the golden-scaled dragonkin woman. But I'm not going to say that in front of them.
Can't we just ride then?
Eric pointed to the Morpho women, but the boy's face instantly turned beet red as the butterfly women giggled.
I don't think you're old enough for that, Eric.
Mira snickered.
That's not what I meant.
The dragon prince grumbled as his hands fidgeted in front of him.
I just meant, like, they all have wings, so couldn't they just pick us up and carry us to the top?
As much as I wish they could, they can't, I explained to the boy. Look at how frail these women are. Meanwhile, we dragonkin have bodies built like a suit of armor. There's no way the Morpho could carry us, even if they wanted to. Besides, climbing builds character. I couldn't help but snort as the last bit of that spiel came out of my mouth. Good lord, I really was becoming a dad. Stereotypical life advice and all. The neon-haired butterfly women each took a different part of the mole bat's hide, one on each end, and then one at the very center to support its weight. Then they slowly flapped their wings and lifted up into the sky, and it was a somewhat comical sight, the three thin, frail morphos lifting such a large roll of fur and skin like ants carrying a leaf back to their colony. Lazan and Nadir wasted no time heading back up the side of the volcano. Both of the Kunag women dashed past us in a hurry, leapt up onto the rocky vertical incline, and began to scurry upward like squirrels climbing a tree. Meanwhile, Eric, Mira, and I wandered over to the bottom of the volcano, found the sturdiest footholds, and then started to climb.
Looks like we've got a lot of character to build, Dad!
My son snarked at the start of our journey. The Morphos and the Kunag beat us up the side of the volcano by nearly a full 30 minutes. All the while, I helped Eric and Mira as they searched for safe footholds, and then hoisted themselves up the mountain slowly but surely. Finally, after nearly an hour and a half of climbing, we arrived back at the peak, and all three of us instantly fell down onto our asses and tried to catch our breaths. See? I joked to Mira and Eric as we all laid there and stared up at the sky. That was quite the character-building exercise, wasn't it?
Maybe if the character you're referring to are the muscles in our arms,
Mira panted,
or our legs, our shoulders, or even our thighs. I think we've done enough character building on those for the next 3 moon cycles.
Why can't dragonkin have wings?
Eric grumbled.
Or claws like the Kunag.
Natural selection, son. I tried to explain through huffs. Just like everything else in the world, the dragonkin people have evolved over hundreds of thousands of years to best adapt to their environment. We were around water all the time and didn't have the luxury of hiding up in the trees, so our skin adapted to become more protective, and our muscles evolved to give us enhanced agility. On the Kunag Island, they adapted to their brutal environment by becoming more brutal, swift, and able to eat meat without wasting time to cook it. I really need to let you sit in on those lessons when I start to teach Kandara.
No, thank you.
Eric shuddered.
I've already got enough lessons to deal with right now.
It sounds like a fascinating theory.
Kandara's voice interjected as she fluttered over to our prone figures.
No, I'm struggling to see how such drastic changes could occur.
Trust me, Kandara, I promised the green-winged butterfly woman. You're not the first one to make that argument. Not by a long shot. But we can cover all of that when I start teaching you. My entire body was still aching from the climb, but I pulled myself up onto my feet and slowly sauntered over to the edge of the volcano. Down below, I could see Jonas as he walked around and waved a burning stick of incense. But the rest of my friends were in various stages of boredom, and seemed to be fighting it in any way they possibly could. Gemma and Tyrion were both nestled up against the inner side of the volcano. The silver dragon was curled up like a sleeping cat, and his bondmate had her head leaned against his neck as she snored loudly. Ahuara, Elzara, and Sela sat in a circle off to the left, and it looked like they had carved some sort of primitive game board into the ground. The three women smirked at each other as they moved some rocks around the board, and then removed what I assumed were the other players' pieces.
"What was that thing you saw down there?"
Malky's voice suddenly asked telepathically.
"I couldn't really hear what was going on, but I could see how big it was from all the way up here."
The copper-scaled water dragon stood on a small flat area of the volcano that overlooked the forest of ashy trees below. "I'm not sure exactly," I admitted. "All I know is it was blind and a pain in the ass to kill."
"I would have come down and helped,"
Malky protested.
"But you told me not to leave my post."
"It's okay," I reassured the water dragon as I reached up and scratched the side of his neck. "You did the right thing. If you'd abandoned your post and come down to help us, there'd be nobody up here to stand guard or defend Jonas. Besides, we figured out how to handle it on our own."
"Oh!"
Halara gasped as she hovered over the opening of the volcano.
"Are you guys playing Steal the Stone? I want in on that!"
"Me too,"
Sarandri's soft voice announced.
"That's my favorite game."
"Count me in as well,"
Kandara grinned.
"I don't think I've beat you guys at Steal the Stone in a while."
Without another word, the butterfly women set the roll of Molebat High down onto the ground, rose up into the air, and then fluttered down to join their friends in the volcano.
"If you don't mind, Dad,"
Eric said from behind me,
"I think I'm going to stay here for a minute. I'm just, not ready to move yet."
"Nor am I,"
Mira admitted. Both of the dragonkin lay there on the ground, with their arms out at their sides and their eyes fixated on the blue sky up above. I honestly started to wonder if they could even physically move, and for a brief moment I felt bad that I'd made them climb up the entire side of the volcano. Then again, I felt fine, and it was good for them both to build up those muscles. And their characters. "That's fine," I chuckled as I approached the rappelling rope anchored into the volcano. "Just yell if you need anything, and I'll try to get up here as quickly as possible."
"I think we might stay up here too, Ben,"
Nadir spoke up as she wrinkled her nose.
"The smelly stuff Jonas is using is overpowering already, and we're not even close to it."
"Oh, yeah," I slapped my forehead. "I totally forgot about your enhanced senses. If you get any closer, it'd probably feel like you were being smothered by a pillow that had been soaked in lavender for a month."
"More like burning nuts and wood,"
Lazan stuck out her tongue.
"I'm staying up here too."
"Well, suit yourself," I shrugged. I grabbed onto the knotted rope and then inched backward toward the edge of the volcano's opening. However, before I could begin my descent, I heard the fluttering of petite wings, and I turned my head to see a thin, yellow-haired beauty of a woman land next to my position.
"I need to talk to you, Ben,"
Queen Dalwyn announced in a matter-of-fact tone.
"It's quite urgent."
"Oh, no," I chuckled.
"It's a serious matter,"
Dalwyn confirmed with a nod.
"But it is not negative."
I took a few steps away from the volcano's edge, dropped the rope to the ground, and then put my hands on my hips. "All right," I said to the orange-winged morpho leader. "What's going on, Dalwyn? Is everything all right?"
"At the moment, yes,"
Dalwyn nodded.
"Jonas is still making strides toward making the rebonding ceremony a reality, and my people seem to already be forming bonds with your crew."
"Well, that's great news," I smiled.
"But there is some bad news I must share."
The queen's face fell into a frown.
"I am not currently pregnant with child, as I hoped I was."
My heart skipped a beat as a frown spread across my face. "How do you know? We only made love for the first time a few days ago."
"I would know by now,"
the queen explained.
"When a morpho woman becomes pregnant, she will know within 2 cycles of the sun. If I were pregnant, my stomach would have already started to show, and I would be able to feel the cocoon forming inside of me."
"The cocoon?" I raised an eyebrow. "You would literally have a cocoon growing inside of your body?" Dalwyn looked at me like I had a third eye. She pursed her thin lips, furrowed her brow, and crossed her arms over her busty chest as she looked me over.
Oh, what other ways do babies form?
The yellow-haired beauty scoffed.
How else are they going to have protection while their small little bodies are developing?
With most species, the kid just forms inside the womb, I explained. They kind of float around in a sack of fluid until the mother goes into labor.
Ugh, a sack of fluid?
Dalwin gagged.
That sounds unpleasant. Also, that seems like it would offer little to no protection.
I mean, it kind of doesn't, I admitted. But that's just how it is for most living creatures. Unless they lay eggs, but I haven't encountered any monster women who can do that quite yet.
Huh. A sack of fluid.
The Morpho Queen chuckled.
How peculiar. Either way, I figured I'd share with you the bad news.
It's all right, Dalwin, I promised as I reached out and touched her soft face. Jonas's vision just said there was a winged child in my future. He never said anything about when it would happen. Dalwin's soft purple eyes glistened in the sunlight as she stared back at me, and it looked like she was on the verge of tears. I ran my thumb along her high cheekbones tenderly in a circular motion, and she cooed in response.
Oh, I cannot wait until it does happen, Ben.
The yellow-haired beauty purred.
Think about how important our son will be to the Morpho people. A child who is half dragonkin and half Morpho. That alone will make them one of the most powerful beings in the world. Then there's the fact they'll be royalty. The son of a king and a queen. Though his parents will be of different bloodlines, his destiny will be clear. Our son will grow up to be a great uniter. I might even go as far as to venture a guess. He'll be the one to finally bring together the Morpho tribes as one unit, under his leadership.
The uniter of the Morpho tribes? These people definitely needed a great leader, given how downright barbaric their system of mating seemed to be, and how scattered they were across this world. That actually brings up some questions I've been meaning to ask, I pondered aloud. How many tribes are actually out there? And do they all have a queen in charge of them like you? People in charge tend to hate ceding their power, so that could make things a bit complicated for anyone who was trying to unite the tribes.
When these women and I split off into our own tribe, there were about 20 different tribes.
Dalwin clarified.
Of course, that was many, many cycles ago. For all I know, several more of the tribes may have fractured off into smaller groups in the time since. There are all sorts of politics at play when it comes to that.
Which is why I kind of feel bad for a future kid, I chuckled. I just hope he doesn't have to go around slaying kings and queens left and right to make his idea of a unified Morpho people a reality.
If that's what it takes, that's what it takes.
The yellow-haired beauty shrugged.
If he takes after his father whatsoever, he'll have no problem conquering a great many people.
Hey now, I teased. I haven't conquered anybody yet. I've just saved a lot of you guys from those orcs, and any other evil bastards trying to hurt you.
A fair point.
Dalwin admitted with a warm smile.
But my original declaration still stands. If our child is anything like his father, he will have no issues in uniting our people.
Let's not count our eggs before they hatch, I sighed. We haven't even conceived this child yet. For all we know, it could take us years of trying before you actually get pregnant.
Oh, I don't think I believe that.
The queen giggled.
Look at how strong your seed is, Ben. You've impregnated how many of your crew members so far? I'm sure that didn't take too many tries.
Yeah, it didn't take long, I snickered. Though I will say we tried as many times as humanly possible, sometimes even multiple times a day.
I am fine with that.
Dalwin purred as she placed her hand between her large breasts. And then she bit her lip as her violet eyes looked me up and down hungrily.
In fact, that was why I wanted to deliver this news to you.
There was a sudden tingling sensation in my nether regions, and my pants began to tighten around the tent I was pitching. Then my mind started to race at the thought of once again sliding my cock deep inside this beautiful woman. You wanted to tell me you weren't pregnant yet, so we try again? I smiled like a fool. Because that's news I can definitely get behind.
Hopefully, literally this time.
Dolman winked, and my heart completely melted. However, there was just one problem. We were currently standing atop a large volcano out here in the middle of a desolate island. There were no private rooms for us to slip into, nor was there any place in the immediate vicinity where we could go that would provide cover for our extracurricular activities. For a brief moment, I thought about going back to the ship, but that would be a long and potentially dangerous journey. As much as I wanted to fuck Dolwyn right here and now, I wasn't going to risk life and limb to do so, and I definitely didn't want to put on a show for the whole crew. Where do you suggest we go? I cleared my throat. There's not much privacy around these parts, I'm afraid.
That's because you're not looking hard enough.
Dolwyn cooed and batted her eyelashes.
Follow me.
The yellow-haired morpho woman grinned from ear to ear as she grabbed onto my hand and floated about a foot off the ground. Then her orange wings fluttered as she moved through the air, and she led me off into what I was sure would be pure ecstasy.